We've been speaking about what? The great question. What is the Bhagavatam informing us about now?
Different questions.
Is this at the beginning? That's something. Yes. But what is the root of this section, these five chapters? But that's. But
so therefore, one should.
I'm asking at the beginning. At the beginning of this. Where is this whole section springing from? Because Prahlad Maharaj's character is so exalted. And in the most difficult circumstance, when one's protector, his protector, the natural protector of a boy, is the father. So the protector had become his enemy and was continuously, not one time, but again and again, trying to kill him. And Prahlad's consciousness was fixed and pure. So what is the principle? He's taught us that. Prahlad has taught us that. There was nine principles, Navanga Bhakti, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Parasevanam. And later on, they've mentioned, what was it, six? Six different principles of bhakti, which were quite wonderful. So, but how to get the consciousness so pure, so purified, that is all one wants, and really intensely wants that, and does not want anything of the material world. So this section explains. So this section explains the religious principles, the spiritual principles that will uplift one gradually to the platform that Prahlad exists on. And these Vanashrama principles, which are described in different parts of 11, 12, 13, 14, and part of 15, describe how to organize society, because the Vedic system is very compassionate. The Vedic system, it is understood, it is accepted, that the purpose of life is to develop one's love for Krishna, and to be situated with that type of a desire. But it also accepts that everyone can't be on that platform. So those who can't be on that platform are not rejected, but rather they are engaged, and they live in such a way that gradually, step by step, according to their natures, according to what they are, not trying to be something that they're not, but according to their actual guna and karma, their qualities and activities, they're engaged and act in such a way that they can satisfy their natures and their material desires, but at the same time move closer to Krishna. And as it was said in the seventh verse of the 11th chapter. And this point was made in the second verse of the 11th chapter, when Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, "My dear Lord Narada, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion," meaning the Dharma, Vanashrama Dharma, "by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life." And the ultimate goal of life is clearly devotional service, to be in consciousness, to be conscious like Prahlad is conscious. Just imagine how better our lives would be if we would see Krishna everywhere and felt completely secure in our realizations that we are living in relationship with Krishna at every moment, and that he's there even in the pillar and even in the pillow, both, that he's there at all times and all places. And this was spoken of by Prahlad Maharaj. that this is what we are meant to see, that our that Krishna is alive and everywhere, and we are alive. We are conscious, and that we are meant to become conscious of Him at all times and all places. So Yudhisthira Maharaj asked about that. I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society, social and spiritual advancement, the Vanashrama system. And in the seventh verse, Dharma Mulam hi Bhagavan. What does Dharma Mulam mean? The root of religion or spiritual life. The Supreme Being, the Personality of God, it is the essence of all. It is Krishna who is the root. And on the basis of satisfying Him, on the basis of that religion, the religious principle, we become satisfied. Just like if we water the root of the tree, all the branches and leaves become nourished. So this is the principle. And because Krishna has given the principle of Vanashrama Dharma, following these Vana and Ashrama principles satisfies Him. He has empowered it, the system, so to speak. So everything becomes satisfied when Krishna is satisfied. Everyone becomes satisfied when Krishna is satisfied, just like all the leaves and branches of a tree become nourished and satisfied when the root is watered. So then he begins to explain, in reply to Yudhisthira Maharaj's question, he explains that basic principle in text 7. And then he goes on in the further verses to describe the rest of the Vanashrama principles, which are ultimately meant to satisfy Krishna. So in chapter 11, what is described? It describes the different varnas, right? Especially the Brahmins, if I remember correctly, and what? Vanaprastas too? Yes, everyone. Yes, especially those two, if I remember correctly. But also the Kshatriyas. Not so much about vices. Then in the 12th chapter, what is described?
The ashram.
The ashram. So that was the vanas described in chapter 11. And in chapter 12, all the ashrams are described. It's beginning with Brahmachari Guru Kule Vashandanto Gorohitam. And at some point, Prabhupada, the devotees who were teaching in Gurukula, they really wanted to find out what is Gurukula about, how to train the children. And Prabhupada gave them some translations of this, of these verses, that the purpose of education is spiritual. The purpose of education, vashandanto, to control one's senses. Because if one has uncontrolled senses, one will have an uncontrolled mind. And if one has an uncontrolled mind, one will not make progress in spiritual life. So the first principle of education is not to enjoy, but to control one's senses and mind by acting for the pleasure of the guru. And if we learn to do this when we're young, to act for the pleasure of another, then and he trains us gradually. The principles that he trains us in are transferred to the intelligence, practically speaking. And then as one lives one's life, one will live in an intelligent way, not in a way with the senses and mind gone mad. And then, so what else is discussed in this chapter? This is Brahmacharya. What else is discussed in the 12th chapter? Huh? Well, what else? There was Brahmacharya Ashram, the role of women. How did the women like the role of women? Yes. It's hard in Kali Yuga, isn't it? All this is very difficult in Kali Yuga because no one has... The society that we're brought up in doesn't support this. It teaches us something very different. The purpose of life is economic development. Only in this... And for economic development, yes. Everyone should try... Forget what situation they're in now. Just move forward and try their best to make economic advancement. It's perfect for that. But for spiritual life, contemporary society doesn't work. It's not compassionate. Contemporary society is not compassionate. Overly competitive, as Prabhupada said. So if I'm not mistaken... there is a lot in the Vanaprastha Ashram in here too. Is that true? Yeah. Okay. I have all this written down somewhere, but I'm not able to locate it. So in the 13th chapter, the Sannyas Ashram, the renounced order of life, is described. And this renounced order of life, the description, is about someone who's a Paramhamsa. There are four different stages of Sannyas life. And the final stage, this Paramhamsa stage, is one where one gives up fully one's relationship with one's body, practically speaking. Practically speaking, there is no attempt in this stage to satisfy the bodily needs, just to keep the body and soul together, perhaps. But just completely focused on one's spiritual identity. This is the Paramhamsa stage. The Paripajakacharja stage is what?
Traveling
and preaching. Because of the four ashrams, they have each have their own special purpose. Brahmacharya ashram is meant for what?
Study.
And if one is not celibate, it's very difficult to focus one's mind in one's books. Because one's mind is always thinking, when one is a student, of members of the opposite sex. Unless the society is geared to promote this. So in Brahmacharya life, it is study. And celibacy is an integral part of that. And in household of life, what's the essential principle?
Done.
Charity. Because there is such a tendency in household of life to accumulate and to never think one has enough. So what is the danger of that? That one will spend one's whole life accumulating, and to satisfy all the needs of everyone, making that attempt. But neglecting one's spiritual life, the Dharma Mulam, which is the Supreme Lord. So the counter of this is household of life is meant for giving charity. And then the third stage, Vanashrama, Vanaprastha life, is meant for what?
Tapasya.
Why? Because it follows household of life. And in household of life, there is a tendency to want to become as comfortable as possible. But and the fault of that, the problem with becoming as comfortable as possible, is that ultimately it's not possible to become comfortable. Isn't that true, Zen Master Me?
It's true.
When your back goes, no matter which position you put it in, you're not comfortable. What to speak of at the time of death? So to break this tendency, Mataji, why don't you open the door? To break the tendency that householder life has fixed one in for comfort, one goes to the forest. And that's what vanaprastha means. One goes to the forest and lives a very austere life. Very austere life. And we read about this in many places of the Bhagavatam. So many kings, because the king has the facility to make his material life comfortable. And then, when he hands it over, his kingdom over to his children, then he performs all types of uncomfortable activities, and those are called austerities. Now, what is the purpose of austerity? If you're used to comfort, what happens when you put yourself in an uncomfortable situation? You suffer. And what does your mind do while you're suffering? Huh? It rebels, it complains, it criticizes, you know, why did I ever have to listen to this person and make me go to the forest? I could have been at home. It's so cold, it's so hot. All you get to eat around here is roots and dry leaves. This, that, fruits in season. It's just the mind. It doesn't want to do that. It doesn't want to perform the austerities. So one, in this way, by performing austerities, it forces one to control the mind. It reverses the tendency of the mind to be the servant of the physical senses. And it is essential because it is closing in on the time when one is going to leave this world, this body. The soul will leave this body soon. So one has to learn to control the mind to focus it on Krishna and try to satisfy Krishna, because he's the Dharma Mulam. He's the root of all religious principles. And sannyas life is meant for what?
Preaching.
Yes. Because one has been through life, one knows what is valuable, what is not valuable. And the female version of this was that the Matajis would go and live with the grown-up children and make sure that the culture was kept intact, and they would be very deferential. And you still see this in India, in certain places, very deferential to the elderly mother, worship, because the mother brought them up when they were children, and therefore they were completely still subordinate. They kept themselves very subordinate to the mother and her. And so many, raise your hand if you were brought up, if you heard Ramayana and Mahabharata from your grandmother. Yeah, this is the system. Yes, you too. Huh? But I didn't ask that. I asked from your grandmother. This was the system. And the grandmother, because there's so much love between the grandmother and the children. So the Mahabharata and the Ramayana would come down to the children with such affection. And having been through life, and the children would always remember their grandmother with such affection, and plus the culture, the essence of the culture, because in these classic books, so much character. They're all stories. They're not always on the highest spiritual platform, but they are on the platform of sub-religious principles, which means all the morality and the ethics of life, and to go through life. Sometimes we'll say bad things about sub-religious principles. They're only sub-religious principles, but some of us have experienced what life is like when you're dealing with with people who don't have any sub-religious principles. It's hell. So sub-religious principles are essential for society. They're not the highest principle, but unless sub-religious principles of morality and ethics are being followed, it's so difficult to follow the true religious principle, which is Sarvadhamam Prityajam Amekam Sharanam Vraja. So sub-religious principles are taught in this way. And this is the female form of sannyas. Be protected and be chanting. And did I told you that story that one devotee told me of their grandmother? Didn't I say that in class? Who was always chanting Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. This is grandmotherhood of the highest degree. And such an impression it makes on all the family members. And to see a person actually leave this world like that, who you loved, you know, just by observing that someone you love leaves this world, she's chanting Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. And you know that one day, even though you may be young, that this is your fate as well. This is what inspired the Buddha in his quest as well. He was confronted with death and old age and disease. So here, in this 13th chapter, we're hearing about one who is completely renounced. Completely renounced, detached from his physical body. There is no identification of himself with the body. That's like, there's such a tendency. I have this sweatshirt. What is it?
Sweatshirt.
Yes. What do you call it? What do you call it?
Sweater.
Sweater or sweatshirt. And there's such a tendency if you wear it day after day after day to think it's you, in a sense. And everyone else thinks it's you also. They see this sweatshirt walking down the road and they'll say, there's Parishan. So when we wear our body, live in the body year after year after year, we identify with it as if it was us, and everyone else also identifies with it as if it was us. But Paramhamsa life means there is the sense of self that we all have is not invested in the body. It's not invested in the sweater, the sweatshirt. It's not invested in the possessions. One time Prabhupada was speaking to some young children in California, I believe. And he said, which one is the most intelligent? And they all brought up one boy, young children. And he said, point to your eye. And the boy went like this. He said, boy, this is going to be easy. He was thinking these kind of questions. Point to your nose, point to your ear, point to your top of your head, point to your arm. Now point to you. It's your arm, your ear, your nose, your eye, your head. So that means you are possessing these things. Possessive pronoun. It is your eye, your arm, your leg. But where is the one who possesses? And in different cultures, in Japan, if you say, point, where are you in your body? Where will you point?
I would point to the neck.
Where do you point? Yeah, in Japan, they go like this. They point to the nose. People like me point to here, usually. In Japan, they point to the nose. Were you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Iran, where do they point? The heart. Yes, much better. No, but the boy, when Prabhupada asked him that, he just, he didn't know where to point. Where are you? So when the sense of self that we all have is invested in the body, that's called illusion. When the sense of self is invested in Krishna, I am his servant. That is the most wonderful thing. When we actually identify ourselves as Krishna's, I am Krishna's, that is who I am. When we perceive ourselves as Krishna's servant and actually have no other sense of self other than being Krishna's servant, this is wonderful. But this takes a full cultivation. So this avaduta we'll start reading from text 31. So what's he been saying so far? What's he been expressing to Prahlad Maharaj so far?
Material activities are all illusory and therefore he has given them up.
I found it quite wonderful. He's just decided, just by his discrimination, he's decided that in text 27, the actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering the subject matter, in other words, he's seen the world, perhaps he's heard about what life is like, he's seen the world, who says they're happy, he's examined things, and he's concluded that it's not actually possible to be happy on the material platform, combining the senses and the sense objects. Adyantavanta Kanteya Nateshu Ramate Buddha, the Buddha, the wise person, he doesn't delight in combining the senses and the sense objects. So understanding this is such a powerful person that just by seeing it and coming to that conclusion, he'd ceased from all material activities. He said, why endeavor on the material level? It only brings misery. And therefore he just gave up all material endeavor and just lied down where he was. This is called agajara vritti. It means accepting the mentality or the pose or the activities of a python. So quite amazing. So such strong realization and acting on it. No hypocrisy. So he talked about how it's impossible to gain material happiness from one's activities. But usually people think, well, the reason why I'm not gaining happiness is I don't have enough
money.
Exactly the point. So the poor may not be happy, but text 31 to 33, his words in those verses describe that the wealthy also can't become happy. So 31. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions. Always mixed. Whatever activity we perform is always mixed with one or more of three kinds of material conditions. Adhyatmik, which means misery caused by adidaivaka and natural disturbances, and anibhotik. Bhotik means bodies, other bodies. Huh? Some what?
Remember that it's
adibhotik,
or it's somebody else.
Somebody, adibhotik. Yeah. Very good. Mnemonic device. Therefore, those always mix in, and it's the actual nature of the attempts for material enjoyment, and how people spend their lives is trying to separate the enjoyment from somebody else, and one's own mind and nature, and trying to control all these things so that they can have pure, sweet sense enjoyment. But it's not possible. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of his success? Even if he's successful, what is the benefit? Because one is still subjected to these miseries, plus birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. We'll just read these three verses, and then we'll read the purports. The Brahmin continued, I'm actually seeing how a rich man who is a victim of his senses is very greedy to accumulate wealth. If a rich man becomes satisfied by what he has, then by definition he won't be greedy. But rich people do get greedy. That means what they have, their wealth, hasn't actually brought them satisfaction. And not only that, not only doesn't it bring satisfaction that the poorer people are longing for, thinking that the wealth will give them, he suffers from insomnia due to fear from all sides, despite his wealth and opulence. Did anyone ever wake up in the middle of the night, like really afraid dreaming that everything they have is being stolen and things like that? Only me. Okay. So the wealth causes so much anxiety rather than causing satisfaction. And those who are considered materially powerful and rich are always full of anxieties. You know why? Because of government laws, because of thieves, because of rogues, because of enemies, family members, animals, birds, persons seeking charity. When we were coming, I recently went to Nathdwar, and we were coming back on the train. There was one man, he walked over to us, and he started saying that he's a contractor for artistic things, and then and he's doing such important work, and he maintains so many people. So I started, of course, preaching to him a little bit, and he became terrified that I was going to ask him for some money on the train. He said, everything is happening by, everything belongs to Krishna. So of course I said, well, who keeps the profit if everything belongs to Krishna? And he became afraid, actually.
Did he see?
Huh?
No.
But he was thinking of it. So he afraid of birds, persons seeking charity, the inevitable time factor, and even their own selves. Now that's an interesting one, and when we read this purport, Prabhupada will explain what that means. How are you afraid that you're going to steal it from yourself? Thus they are invariably afraid. So let's just read these purports, because they make the point. Because there's such a tendency, even for devotees who have given up so much for the service of Krishna, to at certain points of their life when they can look backwards and think, only if, you know, I didn't do this, I could have gotten this, and I could have gotten this, and I could have gotten this. But we should know that even if we get what we want, we will get so much more than what we want as well. And these are the miseries that accompany everything on the material level. It's so important to hear this again and again and again, Because this tendency for the backward glance as one goes has gone on in devotional life is very strong. So text 31, Prabhupada's purport. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, how many varies? Two, Prabhupada adds, gets some material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success. That's called retirement. If one can retire, people work so hard for this, to bring up their families so that at the end of one's life, when one has no energy, one can survive without working and play golf, yes, or tennis. Even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries. So that's not really a success. That's the point here. Adhyatmika, Adhidaivika, and Adhibhautika. No one can escape. So actually, these three are very easy to remember because of the words. Atma means what? Self. So these are the miseries we cause ourselves. Daiva means?
Deva.
The demigods. And Bhautika sounds just like, as Prabhu pointed out, bodies, other bodies. So no one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life. No one can escape it. If you don't agree with this, show us someone who has escaped the threefold miseries of material life. So this Dattatreya, this Avaduta Paramhamsa, he realized it, accepted it, and then immediately acted on it. Namely, misery. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life. Namely, miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. If one works very hard, suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? And then he dies. Beside that, even if a karmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. Just imagine how difficult it is when you're dying. And we should imagine it now because we're going to have to go through it at some point. And maybe not exactly in this way, but all your relatives and the people who love you the most in this world, they're around your bed and crying and crying and crying. And you don't even have the energy to open your mouth and say a word. Give them, don't worry about it, I'll be all right. You can't even say anything like that. There's one Mataji, Acha Vigraha, Mataji died in Vrindavan. And at some point when she was close to death, I put my hand about this hard on her hand, like that. And she said, that causes me so much pain. She said, when my husband was dying, he told me about this incredible pain from the slightest touch, and I couldn't understand it then, but now I understand it. No energy, no prana left in the body. Hard to believe it's going to happen now when the body is not in that condition, but we cannot escape from this. So compared to that, and imagine the torture, everyone's crying and some of them are plotting when he leaves, you know, how much am I going to get in the will and this and that, and they're faking crying, and you know that they're faking crying, and you know this one's really crying, and there's nothing you can do, and the people that you love the most, you're causing so much suffering because you're dying. And in fact, and then your own pain is there, and you want to take away their suffering, and you can't, and you're suffering. So it's so what is the value of the benefits that we have gained in life, Prabhupada is saying? What is the success? You point to someone driving in a big fancy car and you say he's very successful and some envy enters the heart. But what actually is the success? So an intelligent person will measure the success in what he has, in what someone has actually gained. Not gained to lose. If you, would you like to be a billionaire? What happens if I gave it to you right? Are you, you're the only one in the Krishna consciousness movement then that doesn't want to be a billionaire, probably.
Yes,
okay, but now you're a billionaire, and you have it for 7 seconds, and here you are, and there's nothing to buy even, or no one to give it to, or anything. You know, what's the use? What's the use if it's so short that you have it for, and ultimately everything is left behind? So Prabhupada continues, and then when you're dying, and you have all your money, and you've worked your whole life to get it, and then you have to leave it behind. Another kind of torture. Prabhupada continues, I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement. What does bereavement mean? Grief and sorrow. Everyone must die in this way. All our plans half completed. Because as soon as we complete one plan, 10 more take its place. Everyone must die in this way, and after one's mental condition is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value. But under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There were many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably, without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of the threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Prabhupada's purport to 32. Greedy capitalists accumulate wealth under so many miserable conditions, the result being that because they collect money by questionable means, their minds are always agitated, disturbed. Thus they are unable to sleep at night, and they have to take pills for mental tranquility to invite sleep. And sometimes even the pills are a failure. So they have to take pills. This is very common, people taking pills to go to sleep, and then pills to wake up and live their day, and then pills to go to sleep and pills to wake up. Consequently, the results of having accumulated money by so much labor is certainly not happiness. Because when you have lots of money, all the people who are nice to you and are kind to you, what are they trying to do? Huh? Yes, so you can't trust anyone. You can't find satisfaction anywhere because all the relationships are filled with distrust. So what is the value of acquiring a comfortable position if one's mind is always disturbed? Narottama Das Thakur has therefore sung, Samsara Bishanale Diva Nishihiya Jale Judaite Nakainu upai. I'm suffering from the poisonous effects of material enjoyment. Poisonous effects of material enjoyment. Thus my heart is always burning and is almost on the verge of failure. The result of the greedy capitalist's unnecessary accumulation of wealth is that he must suffer from a blazing fire of anxiety and always be concerned with how to save his money and invest it properly to get more and more. And people nowadays, where do they put their money? Not in under their bed, and not buried in the back, they put it in where?
Bank.
No, not in the bank. Because they put it in the stock market. You never know what's going to happen. And this stock goes up and this stock goes down 2 points and 3 points. So much anxiety for people. This collapses, that collapses. So much anxiety. Such a life is certainly not very happy. But because of the spell of the illusory energy, materialistic persons engage in such activities, thinking that the wealth will give them the security that they long for. As far as our Krishna consciousness movement is concerned, we are getting money naturally by the grace of God, by selling our literature. This literature is not sold for our sense gratification. To spread the Krishna consciousness movement, we need so many things. And Krishna is therefore supplying us the requisite money to advance this mission. The mission of Krishna is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And for this purpose, we naturally must have sufficient money. Therefore, according to the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada, so Prabhupada has changed the subject in his purport from accumulating the difference between accumulation of money for materialists and for the devotees in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Especially at this time, when Prabhupada wrote this, there was no congregation. Now the Krishna Consciousness movement is very much a congregational movement. But at this time, there was no congregation, and all the devotees lived in the temple, and they were engaged by the temple, and just everyone was young, tended to be young, and just got some maintenance, and the rest of whatever was collected, a small amount for maintenance, and everyone was young, so there were practically no medical expenditures or anything like that, too. And everything was meant for, all the money came in, just went for the preaching purposes. Therefore, according to the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, we should not give up attachment to money that can spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Papanchika taya bhudya hari sambandhi vastuna mamukshubi prityago vairagyam phago katyate. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things which are related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, though they are material, that is called incomplete renunciation. It is phagu vairagya, false vairagya. Money that can help in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement is not a part of the material world, and we should not give it up, thinking that it is material. Srila Rupa Goswami advises, Anashaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjate nirbanda krishna sambandhe yukta vairagi uchate. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. Money is undoubtedly coming in great quantities, but we should not be attached to this money for sense gratification. This is very, very, very important. This is Prabhupada's strong words. Every cent should be spent for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, not for sense gratification. There is a danger for a preacher when he receives great quantities of money, for as soon as he spends even a single cent of the collection for his personal sense gratification, he becomes a fallen victim. The preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely careful not to misuse the immense quantities of money needed to spread this movement. Let us not make this money the cause of our distress. It should be used for Krishna, and that will cause our eternal happiness. Money is Lakshmi, or the goddess of fortune, the companion of Narayan. Lakshmiji must always remain with Narayan, and then there will be no fear of degradation. And then the final one that we'll read in these three. The word svasmat means from oneself. So Prabhupada gets into that. One is afraid of oneself when one has money. What does he mean by that? Because of attachment for money, the richest person is even afraid of himself. He fears that he may have locked his money in an unsafe manner or might have committed some mistake. That's how. Made a mistake in some way. Aside from the government, I remember when I was in Hong Kong many, many years ago, one man, Prabhupada was coming and he gave us 100 or 200 Hong Kong dollars, which at that time seemed like a lot of money. We used to ask a lot of people. And right now that's worth 200 Hong Kong dollars, maybe divided by six, not very much. In U.S. dollars, it's divided by eight. So it's $25 or something like that, U.S. And then we put Prabhupada in the Hong Kong Hilton, and we needed a little more money for something. So I went back, because he was very wealthy, a gem merchant. And I went back and asked him for something you shouldn't do when you're asking, collecting. Asked him, the same person again, for another donation. And he said, no, I just can't afford it. And then about 2 weeks after Prabhupada left, some thief climbed in the window of his apartment and took his young, very adorable son and took a big knife and put it by his throat and said, open your safe. And he opened the safe and stole something like $20 million in jewels. So I didn't go to him and say, I told you you should have. I didn't do it. I thought it, but I didn't do it. But I went over there and just sympathized with him, which didn't help him very much, really, but what else can you do? But so much danger in this world. What anxiety. Someone is probably, you know, the what he had accumulated from his business for his whole life, and then, boom. So dangerous to keep one's true wealth in a safe, a material safe. They call it safe, but it's not safe. They should call it a not safe. Aside from the government and its income tax, and aside from thieves, even a rich man's own relatives are always thinking of how to take advantage of him and take away his money. Sometimes these relatives are described as Sva Janaka Dasya, which means rogues and thieves in disguise of relatives. Therefore, there is no need to accumulate wealth or unnecessarily endeavor for more and more money. The real business of life is to ask, who am I? And to understand oneself. So very heavy preaching, anti-materialistic preaching. This is the preaching of the renounced sannyasi. Well, then you think, well, who's going to, if I have no money, who's going to take care of me? And the answer is, when you do have money, the same person who was taking care of you then is going to take care of you when you don't have money. One should understand the position of the living entity in this material world and understand how to return back home, back to Godhead. Text 34. These purports are so strong. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. So Prabhupada in his purport explains that in Vedic civilization, which is being described here, people had a different mood. At least the principle was there because of the preaching, because people understood that they were going to die because their grandmothers lived with them when they were young and they weren't put in old age homes. Their grandmothers lived with them and they saw that they died, and they see all the time people in stretchers being carried, bodies with no people inside, and stretchers being carried to Swagadar. And what are they chanting? Ram Nam Satyahe. Ram's name, that is truth. Not this that's going to go up in smoke and flames. In Jagannath Puri, the area where they burn the bodies is called Swagadar. The door, the gateway to Swaga, that is very wishful thinking for most people. Because it wouldn't be popular if they called it Narakdwar. No one likes to think like that. But this is the end of the body. So people in Vedic culture, there was the preaching, there was the shastra, and there was their experience of these things. And they knew it. And life was hard in the sense that people... there were no machines, and it was simpler and less free from anxiety, but people had to work in a very, very simple way to till the fields with the bulls and plant it and harvest it and depend on the rains. And there wasn't an unnecessary accumulation of money. And everything conveniences, and the more modern conveniences you have, the more everything becomes inconvenient for you. Everything becomes inconvenient. And in the West, if you want no one to, if you have to go to the store two or three blocks away, you don't walk. Just people don't do it. They just get in a car and drive, because it's just everything becomes inconvenient, and people are unhealthy because of it, and people so much anxiety and fumes, petrol fumes, and this and that and this and that. Everything becomes inconvenient. So in the Vedic culture, things were inconvenient on one level, but nothing was inconvenient on another level, because people just lived their lives in a simple way. So Prabhupada explains this in the purport to 34, and he explains that I'll just read that we shouldn't collect more than we require. And he explains about the Krishna consciousness movement more on this point. Very, very strong preaching. And he's not preaching to the non-devotees, he's preaching to the devotees. We, a sannyasi, should have an institution meant to preach Krishna consciousness. He need not accumulate money for himself. For himself, very, very, very simple living. And again, I once asked Prabhupada, well, what about householders? And he said, oh, householders can eat and sleep 24 hours a day. He was being extremely sarcastic, because householders aren't souls. They're not, their householder bodies aren't going to die. What is to be gained in household life is the same thing that is to be gained in sannyas life. Prema Pamarto Mahan. What do we actually want to gain from our human experience, our life? We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in our Krishna consciousness movement, 50% of it should be invested in printing books and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. The managers of the Krishna consciousness movement should be extremely cautious in regard to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of limitation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. When I was alone, Prabhupada said, in Vrindavan, I never attempted to construct mats or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling back to Godhead, and thus I would provide for myself and also print the literature. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. When Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principle should still be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna and not a farthing for sense gratification. What is a farthing? No. Yes, what is it? What is it? It's a, in a 1 pound, there are 240 farthings.
There were.
And now they have abolished the farthing and made pence. But it's a very small amount of money. And not a farthing should be spent for sense gratification. That is the Bhagavata principle. Text 35. The bee and the python are two excellent spiritual masters who give us exemplary instructions. This is the Avadhuta Brahmana who is speaking, Paramhamsa. Give us exemplary instructions how to be satisfied collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not move. From the bumblebee I have learned to be unattached. So this is the same principles of the gurus where Dattatreya learns from the 26 gurus, I believe it is in the 11th canto and part of the Uddhava Gita. From the bumblebee, I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money, for though money is as good as honey, anyone can kill its owner and take it away. Prabhupada's purport. The honey gathered in the comb is taken away by force. They call it robbing, actually. That's the English word when they rob the honeycombs. And they do. The bees work, and then somebody comes along and steals all the honey. And that's what happens. Therefore, one who accumulates money should realize that he may be harassed by the government or by thieves or even killed by enemies. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is said that instead of protecting the money of the citizens, the government itself will take away the money with the force of law. The big gundas, the big thieves. If you print money, they will put you in jail. But they do it all the time without having anything behind it. The learned Brahmana had therefore decided that he should not accumulate any money. One should own as much as he immediately needs. There is no need to keep a big balance at hand, along with the fear that it may be plundered by the government or by thieves. He continues, I do not endeavor to get anything. So that's what he learned from the python, from the bee. Just take a little, as much as you need. And from the python, I do not endeavor to get anything. The python basically opens his mouth. But I am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python and lie down in this way for many days. Prabhupada's more instructions about money. One should learn detachment from the bumblebees, for they collect drops of honey here and there and keep it in their honeycomb. But then someone comes and by force takes all the honey away, leaving the bumblebees with nothing. Therefore, one should learn from the bumblebee not to keep more money than one needs. Similarly, one should learn from the python to stay in one place for many, many days without food and then eat only if something comes in its own way. Thus the learned Brahmana gave instructions gained from two creatures, namely the bumblebee and the python. He continues, sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it's stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect. Sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day and sometimes at night. Thus I eat what is easily available. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deerskin, according to my destiny. Different things come, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Fully satisfied because his satisfaction is coming from a different level. And to imitate this is not possible. He's a Paramhamsa. So practically one should take what one needs, but don't take more and try to live as simply as one practically can. As simply as one practically can, for the purpose of using one's time and energy to make advancement in spiritual life in the service of Krishna, in the service of Srila Prabhupada and his movement. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes by the will of others in a palace, on a first-class bed with pillows. Prabhupada's purport. The learned Brahmana's description indicates different types of births. So he's not identifying with the body, this body, or any of the bodies that he's inhabited one after the other. For one lies down according to one's body. The dogs I see in Vrindavan, they like to lie in ashes in the winter, because there must be some warmth in there. Sometimes one takes birth as an animal, and sometimes as a king. And according to the body, we get a different place to lie down. But the principle of lying down is the same. The principle of sleeping is the same. When he takes birth as an animal, he must lie down on the ground. When he takes birth as a king or a very rich man, he's allowed to lie in a first-class rooms in huge palaces decorated with beds and other furniture. Such facilities are not available, however, at the sweet will of the living entity. Rather, they are available by the supreme will, parichaya, or by the arrangement of maya. And then the last line, by the will of the Lord, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down. Text 41. O my Lord, who is speaking this? Sometimes I bathe myself very nicely, smear sandalwood pulp over my body, put on a flower garland and dressed in fine garments and ornaments. Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant or on a chariot or horse. Sometimes, however, I travel naked like a person haunted by a ghost. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping they will agree to become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And Prabhupada ends his purport by saying there's different people get in different positions in their life and have different amounts of enjoyment and suffering. And he says, people of different mentalities are people of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded. But this is not the goal of life, to become materially elevated or to become materially degraded. Rather, the goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and take to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a saintly person does not discriminate between that which is supposedly good and supposedly bad. Rather, he desires for everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of life. So one must learn, obviously, his wealth, this Paramhamsa personality who's adopted the Agajara Vritti, his wealth is on a different level than on the material level. His wealth is on the level of his spiritual realization. And that wealth we should protect very, very carefully. The wealth of one's spiritual realization. And materialistic people, they want to protect their material wealth, but they cannot protect their material wealth. It must be stolen from them by the different elements mentioned, different aspects of material life, whether it's the plotting relatives or the thieves or the government taxation officers. And the governments, when they're angry at somebody, that's a wealthy person who's giving them trouble. That's one of their main weapons. They get him for tax evasion and they take away everything. And they did that to that Russian fellow, the oil fellow. And they completely destroyed him. That's their weapon. And they're doing something similar to in Kazakhstan. You know, they want something, they make the laws, they enforce the laws, and they do whatever they want. That's the big criminals. So the mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad on the material level should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind. Because this is what the mind does. So it should be brought back. This is just the mind's activity, which should then be invested in the false ego. And this is just the mind just acting based on the false sense of self. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy, that it doesn't really have anything to do with us. The false ego is the first thing, practically speaking, that is produced from the pradhan, the primal material element. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. So in the purport, towards the end of Prabhupada's purport, he explains the purpose of this type of a yogic type of process of unentangling the soul from the false ego. This is right towards the end. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying the material discrimination on the platform of psychology and nullifying the false ego by which one thinks I am this body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego into the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. This is the process of becoming free from material attraction on using the yogic organic type of method. But devotees just hear who we are, they accept they are servants of Krishna, and then just do service and accept a different type of ego, a different sense of self, that I am Krishna's servant, I am the servant of every living entity, I'm the servant of Sri Guru, of all the Vaishnavas. I'm a servant, I'm not a master. Meant to enjoy. So false ego is this master mentality. I am the doer, kartaham, iti manyate, ahankar, bewildered by false ego. I am doing this. How dare they do this to me? Don't they know who I am? False ego, real ego, I'm a servant of Krishna and everything and everyone connected to Krishna. So there's just a few more verses in this. Read them. A learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is illusion. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in self-realization. We'll just read the last sentence in Prabhupada's purport. So we shouldn't only think I'm a servant of Krishna, we should become situated in that mood and try our best to continuously serve Jivera Sarup Hoy Krishna Nityadas, to act on that principle. Then we're in the realm of bhakti. When one actually becomes a perfect yogi by meditation, he can see the Supreme Friend and surrender unto Him. This is the beginning of bhakti yoga, or actual life in Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj, the Avaduta Brahmana, said, "You are certainly a self-realized soul and a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You do not care for public opinion or so-called scriptures. For this reason, I have described to you without hesitation the history of my self-realization." Purport. A person who is actually a devotee of Krishna does not care about so-called public opinion and Vedic or philosophical literatures. Prahlad Maharaj, who was such a devotee, always defied the false instructions of his father and the so-called teachers who appointed to teach him. Instead, he simply followed the instructions of Narada Muni, his guru, and thus he always remained a stalwart devotee. This is the nature of an intelligent devotee. The Srimad Bhagavatam instructs, Yagya Sankirtana Prayer Yajantihi Samedana Medasaha. One who is actually very intelligent must join the Krishna consciousness movement, realizing his own self as an eternal servant of Krishna, and thus practice constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, quite interesting what Prabhupada said. An intelligent person, means Sumedhasa, must join the Krishna consciousness movement. Realizing, why does he do that? He's realizing his own self as an eternal servant of Krishna. And thus, practice. And because he joins, because he understands he's a servant of Krishna, and what does he do? He thus practices constant chanting the holy name of the Lord. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So we should join, but also we should understand that we are servants of Krishna. This is our natural and constitutional position. And then also we should always chant Hare Krishna. Now what will happen if we always chant Krishna's names? So this is a good thing, yes? But Daiva Midrisam Ihan Anujanu Raga. Unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. Even if Sunya Bishakainu, Janiya Sunya Bishakainu, even after knowing and after hearing, still I prefer to drink poison, the poison of material sense gratification. So unfortunate. But it is the best of all habits and the best of all advice. Who says it's the best advice? To constantly chant Krishna's names. But who says specifically it's the best of all advice? Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami says this. Where? Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction. The essence of all advice. Therefore, we should explode in ecstasy by always chanting Krishna's names. And the final verse in this chapter. So this again, the chapter is the behavior of a perfected person, the behavior of the Paramhamsa renunciant. Narada Muni continued, "After Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the demons, heard these instructions from the saint, He understood the occupational duties of a perfect person, a Paramhamsa, and thus he duly worshipped the saint, took his permission, and then left for his own home. As quoted, Prabhupada's purport, as quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 8.128, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kiba vipra kiba nyasi sudra kene nai ye krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. A guru or spiritual master can be anyone who is well conversant with the science of Krishna. Therefore, although Prahlad Maharaj was a grihastha ruling over the demons, he was a paramhamsa, the best of human beings, and thus he is our guru. In the list of gurus or authorities, Prahlad Maharaj's name is therefore mentioned. Swayambhu Narada Sambhu Komara Kapilo Manu Pralado Janako Bhishma Balir Vyasakir Vayam. The conclusion is that a Paramhamsa is an exalted devotee, Bhagavat Priya, dear to the Bhagavat. Such a Paramhamsa may be at any stage of life, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and be equally liberated and exalted. So because this topic is of the, on vanashrama, these topics here, so the essence of it all, again, the dharma mulam, the root of the principle, is to satisfy Krishna. And one who does that, he is Bhagavata Priya. He is the Uttama Bhagavata, regardless of what vana or ashrama he is within. Se Guru Hari. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports as the 7th chapter, 13th, 7th canto, 13th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So why is it that we don't constantly chant? What form does that avidya take?
Like jaundice.
What it takes the form of passion and ignorance. The words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because we're in offenses, but he said that because, and even though we may say we're inspired, we heard something wonderful about the constant chanting of Krishna's names from Srila Prabhupada, so we say from now on I'm going to constantly chant Krishna's names, but as long as the infections of passion and ignorance are there, we will be unable to do so. So therefore, there can be many therefores. You should fill one in. Therefore, we should be very humble. Therefore, we should be very, very sad. And be careful, be very careful, therefore. And be very prayerful, knowing how much mercy we require. So many therefores. Okay. We'll stop here. And 12:30, we'll come back, and in the next section there are 10 verses. No? Sorry. Eight verses, the first eight only. In chapter 14. And then we finish tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll finish 14th chapter. In two classes. And then after the 14th chapter, begin the 15th chapter. And the conclusion of the 15th chapter is this conclusion, that the great devotees are, that is what is to achieve through all this. And if one perfects these things but doesn't achieve devotion to Krishna, shravan evahi kevalam, it is just so much useless labor. Okay, exactly at 12.